Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Bookie Beatdown coming at ya. Paul, Cody, UFC Shanghai. Middle of the morning for most North American souls.
Beginning of the morning.
I guess this is how we can relate to like the European fans, right? Because like every damn card happens like this. I don't know how they do it. I look at this and I go, Weston Wilson fighting at like, 3 o'clock in the morning. Is that getting me out of bed? It may. But I'm a different breed. I love this stuff. I love watching fights. I love betting on fights. No casuals getting up for any of this, but we're going to break it down for you. Any thoughts before we get into the action here, Code?
No, I mean, it's a UFC Shanghai card. So again, the UFC has their main shows and they have their apex fight nights. And then they have to break into these other markets. And because they have a UFC Performance Institute Shanghai, because they have a UFC Performance Institute Mexico City, that they'll go to Mexico and do a full Spanish card. Well, they've been mostly doing those noche cards, which sometimes happen in America. But you know what I mean? It's a card mostly for their South American talent, their Mexican talent. This is a card mostly for their Chinese talent. So you're seeing a ton of guys there. On top of it, as Paul mentioned, it starts at 3 o'clock in the morning, Eastern time, on Saturday. You've got a PFL on Thursday. There's a ONE Championship Friday morning. There's a Road to the UFC Friday morning. There's a Fury FC Friday night, an LFA Friday night. This UFC card is Saturday morning. There's a Tough Enough card Saturday night. And on top of that, I'm planning my own show this weekend as well. I got 13 fights on the card, and it's just, you know how it is, man. Guys call the stupidest excuses. So I'm trying to put on a 12-fight card on Saturday while there's seven other cards happening, within the two-day span. And then just like to add to the headache, Paul, I get this call last night. This Adam Shaday guy, he says, oh, dude, I messed up, man. I messed up. I thought this fight was at 195 pounds. I can't make 185 right now. I'm going to have to pull out. Says, dog, it's all good. Talk to your opponent. He's down to move it to a 195. He says, oh, man, I completely forgot, man. Your show's in Mississauga. I pleaded guilty to this assault charge. And, like, part of my probation is I can't come to the GTA. I'm not allowed to go to the GTA. But by
where, where's
here,
he from?
London, Ontario, right? So I'm like, GTA is a really big space, like a really big
space. That sounds Fugazi.
Sounds Fugazi, right? So I look at it, it's like, dude, he fought in Burlington in June. Burlington's GTA. So I tell him, you fought in Burlington a couple months ago. He goes, no, Burlington's not GTA. I said, well, it is. He says, So apparently it's a little iffy. Technically, it's considered GTA. They don't consider themselves GTA. His whole thing to that is, I didn't even know. And so I screwed up by going to that show. I shouldn't have. But I just talked to my probation officer, and he says Mississauga is a no-go because I assaulted someone in Mississauga. And if I step foot there, or not even in Mississauga, I assaulted someone in the GTA, I'm not allowed to go back. So I'm like, well, who's going to call the cops on you? He says, my ex. I said, well, did you assault your ex? Turns out he did. I'm like, this guy's a woman beater that doesn't really want to fight. Anyways, my uncle's a lawyer. So I call my uncle up, and he's like, I'll give him free legal advice. He's a criminal defense lawyer. Send me over his documentations, his paperwork, all the conditions of his probation, and, I'll sort it out for him. And I'll give him free legal advice. So I call this guy out, and he's like, buddy, I got it covered for you. Send me your paperwork. I'll get my uncle to look it over. You're good to go. He's like, man, I'm sorry, dude. The stars just aren't aligning on this one. I can't take the chance, man. There's a warrant for my arrest. If I step foot, I'm getting arrested. I talked to my probation officer. He said, no way. I'm sorry, dude. Sorry to do this. I have to bail. I was like, what if I paid you $300? He's like, I'm willing to risk it, to be honest with you. I was like, son of a bitch. He clearly doesn't want to fight. $300 is no money. And he's in. So apparently he's showing up Friday.
For $300.
I got to be, well, I ain't paying him till the fight's done. He's going to fight and then he's going to get paid his money. But yeah, I don't know. I had to pay to play, I guess. I floated it out there to be like, what level of pussy is this guy at right now? And I'm not saying he's a puss because he's not going to get in the cage and fight. It takes a man to do that. I'm saying he's come up with a lot of excuses, much of which were bullshit. The weight thing, don't worry, that's not a problem. Oh, shit. Well, this assault thing. Okay, well, we can get that sorted out too. Oh, shit. I can't do it. $300. He's in. He's carpooling down and he's sleeping in the car. So I don't know, but I got a feeling he's going to get his ass kicked. That's beyond me. All I can do now is focus on UFC Shanghai and hopefully there's some more responsible guys on that card.
Yeah, this is sounding all like the who's the guy, the British guy on like Tough Enough that walked in and then walked out of the venue?
Dunn. James Dunn.
Yeah,
he shows up and then he
That's what's going to happen here.
Yeah,
hot tape. The buddy's not getting his $300. He's just going to show up. He's going to see his ex in the crowd and vanish. That's what's going to happen here.
Well, his ex is obviously going to avoid him. And he told me too. He's like, okay, well, if I do this, you pull the poster. Like, well, the poster's been out for 2 weeks, and it's not as if your ex has contacted any authorities. And also, you fought in Burlington, and you were plastered all over that poster, and she didn't say anything. So, yeah, the guy's weird. I follow him on social media. He posts a whole bunch of nonsense. He's jacked. He's in shape. I don't know that he knows how to fight for shit. So, I think there's a loss incoming for him, but it's just the constant stuff you got to deal with. It's like I say all the time, like matchmaking sounds like it's a dream job. Oh, man, just you can make the fights that you want to see. No, it's not like that. It's like, oh, fighter A, fight fighter B. Well, fighter B is injured. We'll fight fighter C. Well, fighter C turned down the fight. We'll fight fighter D. Well, fighter D's got a celebration of life that day and he can't make it. We'll fight fighter D. Like, you just go through a giant list of excuses. And, of course, they pull out for reasonings from my girlfriend broke up with me, my head's not in it, to they got a staph infection, to the one guy broke his toe. It's like, listen, man, do you have a broken toe or do you have camel toe? Which one is it? you want to fight or not? It kills me. But that's the nature of the game. So a lot of times when people are like, oh, Cody's, you know, doing these picks and he forgot to mention that in 2017, this guy got taken down in this fight. It's like, man, I'm talking about 7 cards this week. I'm doing my own card. I have 3 kids. I'm trying to give you the pertinent information. Sometimes you may miss over like, you know, a small little stat here and there, but I feel ready for this Shanghai card. I feel ready to do some business. I don't mind some of the lines on it. We just got to make sure we avoid those apple pie shitters, my friend.
100% main event. We got Ming Yang Zhang taking on a Johnny Walker. Zhang, -305 favorite. The comeback on Walker is +255. I mean, Zhang round one. That's how he wins all of his fights. In his KO prop, -217. Round one, best price right now. That's the cloud bet number. +104. I took some of that last night. Why? Because Zhang just ices fools in the first round. We've seen Johnny Walker absolutely meme KO'd many, many times. That's not to say Johnny can't hang out at range, you know, maybe extend this a little bit, but I think eventually Zhang's going to catch that chin, put him out of his misery. Your thoughts here?
Yeah, I'm on Zhang gang as well. When you look at Johnny Walker, it's like not that he doesn't have some skill. He's 6'6". He's got a giant reach on him. He is bigger than Zhang. On top of that, this is the weirdest stat of all time. Johnny Walker has a 100% takedown accuracy. He's taken down 2 guys, but he's only shot 2 takedowns. So he's not a wrestler. He has Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. He can grapple. He's been spending a lot of time with his brother, Walter Walker, who's been telling him, just drop on leg locks, dog, just drop on leg locks. So he's definitely been working on his grappling. And I would say for Zhang, that's maybe the one thing we don't really know about him, is the guy is a brute. The guy's a heavy-handed power puncher, more of a brawler, but certainly someone that can turn the lights out. But I don't really know to what effect his grappling. He's been only guy to take him down was on the contender series was Tuco Tokos. And to be honest, Tuco showed two takedowns, got one, and only got about 40 seconds of control time out of it. So there's no reason to believe that he has no ground game. But Brenson Ribeiro's a striker. Ozzie Diaz is a striker. Anthony Smith is shot to bits. I suppose for the most part is more of a striker. So no one's really tested him on the ground. And I would think for Johnny Walker, he's been mean KO'd, as you mentioned, Paul, so many times that I don't think he's looking to get into a firefight. I think he's looking to get Zhang to the ground and test that ground game. Well, how does he do that? He's going to probably have to take him down. Johnny's not shooting your traditional single leg or double leg. It's mostly he may try to clinch you up and try like a foot sweep of some type. Being 6 foot six, it's hard for him to drop his base and shoot a takedown. Therefore, a lot of it's going to be inside trips, outside trips, foot sweeps, just something that he can grab a clinch, hold you up against the cage, use some leverage, disrupt your balance, take you down. I don't know that you want to get that close to Zhang because he's going to hit you. And in Walker's case, if he gets hit, I just don't think he's going to hold up to it. Before he came to the UFC, Walker had, I guess, Wagner Prado had TKO'd him. Henrique Silva in Jungle Fights knocked him out in 18 seconds. And then the Corey Anderson, not known for big power, knocked him out in 2 minutes. But it's like Paul mentioned, is as of late, the Jamal Hill overhand right, the Magomed Ankalaev right hook to uppercut sequence, Volkan Oezdemir's last time out with another uppercut. It just seems like maybe he can't take those shots. Now, I know Walter Walker's been imploring him, go to heavyweight. These guys at heavyweight are slow, and you're still a big, long, tall guy. You're faster than them. You'll be able to sit on the perimeter and bait them in. And, hey, I'm fighting at heavyweight, and I'm doing just fine. Well, he's choosing to stay at 205. And a guy like Zhang is heavy-handed. He's fast. He's durable enough. I don't think that he's a complete package in the slightest sense of the word, right? You go back to his fight with Brenson Ribeiro. He's looking at the ref being like, my eye, the ref's like, it was not an eye poke. And then he turns back to Brenson, claps him with a two piece and drops him. Right. I think he can get tagged up. I think someone like Johnny Walker could pump a jab in his face and maybe try to shoot a takedown. There's holes here, but the bottom line is the UFC realizes who are our top Chinese prospects. And yes, there's a few of them stateside. There's a few really good fighters out of Team Alpha Male. Of course, they've got a champion in Zhang Weilei. But this is a light heavyweight Chinese prospect, a male fighter over the class of 155 pounds. It's a rarity for them. And I think they're looking to promote him. This is a great way to say, hey, Johnny Walker has a name. He's got experience. He's tenured. The casual fan knows who he is. And the bottom line is it's a fan-friendly style, and it's a good spot for you to come out there, catch him early, and get that knockout. So I got Zhang as well, Zhang by knockout. First round sounds very plausible. I feel like Walker's probably going to take his time. Maybe it materializes in the second. Also, the guys that knock Walker out, you can't discredit him here. It's like Volkan Oezdemir, Magomed Ankalaev, Jamal Hill. Thiago Santos never even knocked him out. But all those guys have either touched gold or fought for gold. So, you know, Zhang's by far the worst guy he's fought in a while. And the flip side of that is Johnny Walker is the best guy that Zhang's fought. So this is not as easy as a 3-1 favorite, but it's a setup fight as far as I'm concerned. I do feel that Zhang materializes with that knockout win.
Hundo P. All right, we'll move on down. We've got Brian T. City Ortega taking on Aljamain Sterling. Sterling, a minus 270 favorite to come back on Ortega. Plus 230, who he got here.
If it was a prime version of Brian Ortega, then yeah, why can't he hang with Aljamain Sterling? One, he's got superior volume in that he's down again to a firefight and crash the pocket, and he's got a Mexican-American chin, so like knocking him out, pretty difficult, but not impossible. He does get dropped to the canvas. He does get stung the odd time, but he was known for his durability. He's known for his pace. And of course, he's got wicked Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. So if Aljamain Sterling, who we know prefers to wrestle and grapple, shoots the takedown on Ortega, you know, he's going to be into not you're shooting into a triangle choke. He's not incompetent. He's a black belt himself that's training with some of the best guys. Just it is a danger zone when you go to the ground with Brian. Prime Brian. Also, Prime Brian is durable and he stands in your face. Like, I think he's gone through some stuff. If you know his story, you know, he's a former gangster and then he leaves his buddies and then he gets into boxing and then he gets an injury and then he's dating Tracy Cortez and she's had some really negative things to say about him. And then when you see him, it's like he's not in shape. He's jumping in fight to fight. He had that. He was going to fight Diego Lopez on short notice at 155, got deathly ill like the day of the fight and pulls out. They rebook it at 145. All I'm saying is when you watch him, it looks like he's going through the motions more than anything. He's slower. His boxing's regressed. He's not moving his head. His wrestling is really not all that good. His grappling, although that's still the best part of his game, it's hard to just be in 2025 guard player, pull guard and throw up submissions off your back. If there's that much of a discrepancy between you and your opponent, maybe. But in this case, it's like Aljamain Sterling on top of him is going to be a big problem. I know Sterling will win this fight. The only thing that's really causing me the real hesitation is that, yeah, Ortega's a big 45er. Had tried to fight at 155, has mentioned to the UFC, I would like to go to 155 versus a former bantamweight champ. So it's entirely possible that Brian Ortega is a lot bigger than him, maybe a little bit physically stronger, and gives him some type of problem. But I just go back to the recent form. After Max Holloway hit Brian Ortega 290 times, it took something out of him. His fight with Alexander Volkanovski, Volkanovski hits him 214 times. So there's a stretch of time there between those two fights. He got hit 504 significant strikes absorbed between the Volkanovski and the Holloway fight. 504. If you put in the Chang Sung Jung fight on top of that, it's 566 significant strikes, significant absorbed over three fights. After that, I don't know, it's been injuries. Obviously, the first Yair Rodriguez fight, he dislocates his shoulder. The second Yair Rodriguez fight, he got dropped to the body, was losing the fight. Yair kind of tired and took over. And then Diego Lopez fight. Diego Lopez knocked him out standing. The second punch woke him back up. I just think he's slower. His reaction time is slower. His durability is starting to fade. I think he's getting some problems. Only guys he's taking down, Yair Rodriguez. He took him down in both of their fights. He had a couple takedowns over Volkanovski, but of course that's, you know, 4 years ago at this point. Aljamain Sterling at 135, one of the greatest, right? The guy can do it all. At 145, he leaves something to be desired, but I'll give him credit, right? The Calvin Kattar fight, he routes him with the 8 takedowns, but the Movsar Evloev fight, this is the top contender in the division. You're up a weight class taking on a guy in Movsar that nobody wants to take on Evloev, and yeah, he took him down 6 times. He's able to hang with him. The difference there is when you take down Evloev, he's getting right back up, and he's got the cardio that he's going to keep pushing, and so Sterling just resorted to only grappling in that fight. If you go back to some of his fights with, say, Peter Yan, his striking is good. His jab is nasty. And he's very, very fast. And he throws everything straight. This is only a 3-round fight. So Sterling having to push him crazy pace and tiring the later it goes, that's not really on the table. Him being able to just stuff this jab down Ortega's, down straight down the pipe, hit Ortega. Ortega's slower. His reaction time is slower. He's constantly got the onus is on him to come forward, and Sterling just uses his footwork to dance around. Once this guy gets over-aggressive, you hit him with a shot he doesn't see coming, you drop under, take the takedown. You think he's throwing up a triangle or an armbar on Aljamain Sterling? I would find that hard to believe. I think Sterling just beats him standing, takes him down, be the faster guy, be the quicker guy. The jab will present a whole lot of problems for a guy like Ortega that tends to be a little bit flat-footed and not move his head. He's just going to chop him up. There'll be blood. Ortega will be bleeding. Visually, it's going to look good for the judges. If he's coming forward and he's trying to make this a real greasy fight, your get-out-of-jail card is get the takedown, right? Set up shop on top. So I feel like Sterling wins this fight. As much as I feel like Sterling wins this fight by decision, I'm not fully convinced of Brian Ortega's durability these days, so I could see him getting taken out. And the -270 price tag for the money line on Sterling, I don't like it. I don't necessarily agree that it should be that deep, but I agree that he's the rightful favorite, and he's my play as well.
I'd be pretty surprised if Aljamain finishes Brian Ortega.
Probably a bit of a stretch, yeah.
I think Sterling by decision is probably the most likely outcome here. It's just doubles him up on strikes, uses speed. And I think engaging in the grappling, you know, with the natural 145 or the bigger guy, the guy with, for what he may lack in terms of speed and everything, it's like taking it into that realm is going to be a problem. Like I could see it looking a lot like the Diego Lopez fight, except for like the power coming back isn't going to sting as much, but you know, Ortega, true, really didn't shoot takedowns in that fight, just kind of charged forward. That was a UFC noche. I don't know exactly what was going on with him there. Even the Yair Rodriguez fight, like that round one, like he was almost dead to rights in round one against Yair and then came back, got that triangle finish. So, yeah, it hasn't been a great run for him after taking all that damage against the elite of the elite, in the division in Volkanovski and Holloway. Aljo decision, it's like pretty much a pick 'em. That's how I'd go about it. Moving on down, we got Sergey Pavlovich taking on Waldo Cortez Acosta. Sergey, a minus 225 favorite to come back on Waldo, plus 190. We got
Waldo Cortez Acosta gives me Martin Budai vibes in the sense that he's 7-1 in the UFC, and it feels like they could cut him at any point. I don't think he's entertaining at all. The Salsa Boy, 6'4", 78-inch reach, former pro boxer. When he was boxing guys, he'd knock out some people. He would get knocked out often himself. But in MMA, it's like he's just got that Justin Ledet game to him. He's got a jab. Most of these heavyweights don't know how to jab or don't have the speed to just constantly jab for 15 minutes. So that's kind of his thing. He's got some okay footwork. He's mobile for a big guy. You know, former baseball player from Dominican Republic. He's an athletic guy, but it's just a mostly jabbing from the outside. He can sit down on a punch here and there, but it's a sparring type style. His wins include Jared Vanderoe, cut, Chase Sherman, cut, both of them by decision for the record. Lucas Brzezinski, he went to decision with Andre Arlovsky where he got outstruck. Robelis Despang, Ryan Spann in his heavyweight debut. And then I don't mind that last one over Sergey Spivak, who I at least rate to a certain extent. But yeah, just like Martin Budai, you have this awesome looking record in the UFC and you've beaten absolutely nobody. And most of which are by decision. People don't want to see your decision, Andre Arlovsky. And again, like I said, Chase Sherman, Jared Vandera. His loss, Marcos Rogério de Lima, like also did not age well. This guy's is a bum. I don't overly care for Waldo Cortez Costa's style. I think it's a lot of flim-flam from the outside, and it's going to be subjective to the judges. Beyond that, none of these guys are really wrestlers. Sergey Spivak can grapple. He's a grappler. He's the only guy that actively really went out there and shot takedowns, and he did get two of them, right? When I look at Sergey Pavlovich, he's more of a well-rounded total package. It's that the losses have kind of just messed up with his game planning. He'll find his comfort zone again, but up until the Tom Aspinall fight, he was just banging it out. This guy can wrestle, absolutely can wrestle, comes from a wrestling base, moves to Thailand, learns to throw hands, has heavy-duty power in both fists, and as a result, he fell in love with that. His run of wins is all first-round knockouts. Marcelo Gomes, Maurice Green, Shamil Abdurakhimov, Derek Lewis, Tai Tuivasa, Curtis Blaydes. That's a nice list of wins. Mm-hmm. And then when he runs into Tom, if you watch back that fight, right before he gets KO'd, he stings Tom. Tom takes the shot and is like, oh, damn. Pavlovich steps in, Tom counters, ices him. But he had the same game plan. I'm going to throw down with Tom Aspinall and knock him out. After that, he got super complacent. He fought Volkov, which is weird because Volkov's 6'7" with an 80-inch reach. So he's a former training partner, and you can't throw this huge power, and you don't want to throw the huge power because you just got knocked out. So he fought him hesitant. People will say, oh, you're just coming in with theories. But Francis Ngannou did the same thing. He lost to Stipe where he gassed. His very next fight against Derek Lewis, he didn't throw any punches. Because he's like, I just lost gassing out. It messes with your psyche. After the Lewis fight, he went back to just knocking people out in the first round. But there took two fight period of time for him to refine himself. Mm-hmm. After he lost to Volkov, it's like, oh, damn. Maybe I don't want to just stand and swing bombs all the time. So when he fought Yarosina Rosenstruck, Rosenstruck's got decent kickboxing. And we always call him, he's got the death touch. Got big power. So Pavlovich doesn't swing with them. He takes them down. I think he's finding that comfort zone of I can strike and I can wrestle. And this is mixed martial arts. So you need to be able to blend your skills together. And that's where you're going to find that comfort zone. Against Waldo Cortez Acosta, he's got a jab. He likely has better volume. He doesn't have a 80-inch reach like, you know, Volkov, but he's got a 78-inch reach on him. Pavlovich, for the record, it's 84. He's also 6'3", so he's an inch shorter, but has a 6-inch reach advantage. You wouldn't know it because he doesn't throw straight punches. But what I'm saying is he should be able to time the jab or at least just avoid it for the most part. And then you either got to clunk him with a big old overhand or take his ass down. I think he can take him down. Rosenstruck, in many ways, fights similar to Waldo. Less jab, but big, mobile heavyweight. Rosenstruck's got power Cortez Acosta really doesn't, but all the same, it's like this is a big guy, mostly predominantly a striker. Take him down and grind him. And I think that would be the path. If you take him down a few times and you get him guessing, oh no, he's going to shoot the takedown, he has his hands low, and you can swing one over the top and knock him out, sure. He's not been knocked out in MMA, but he's been knocked out in boxing plenty of times, and those are with 10-ounce gloves on. So I feel like Pavlovich can knock him out, but I think the real path here is take him down, grind him, bank a couple of these rounds, and because he's got a decision style, If you can just bank two of the three rounds, you can run away in the third for all I care. He'd be fighting out of a hole. Last week's UFC card, like five of the winners dropped the third round, but they won the first two. That's the key. Win the first two, coast if you want. That's what Pavlovich needs to do if the knockout doesn't materialize. But I feel like he's got more passive winning this fight, and Waldo just goes through the motions too much for me. So it's a Pavlovich play.
Not too much for me to add there. I like where your head's at in a lot of things. We'll see where like some of those websites open up like props on takedowns. Maybe the cat's out of the bag because, you know, Sergey did it last fight out against Rozenstrike, but may get a little bit of value on like an over 1.5 takedowns for Pavlovich. I wouldn't. Yeah. I mean, these guys could come right to the center, just bang it out. And I think that would probably favor a guy like Pavlovich. Both of these guys can throw heaters, don't get me wrong. But Pavlovich, when he was landing, kind of had the death touch. But I think he leans on the wrestling again as well. Just kind of take the take the former boxer out of his comfort zone and find the path to victory that way. You strike me as a over 1.5, -165 kind of guy. You strike me as, I don't know if you're going to get that greasy, but like Pavlovich by decision is like +350 in some spots right now.
I don't mind that
dicey because like it's heavyweights, but the over 1.5 I don't hate.
Yeah, because it's a 1.5, I don't hate it. -160, I'd like a little bit better, but yeah, if Pavlovich loses, it's going to decision.
Yeah,
Pavlovich wins, he could win a decision. He could knock him out. But like you said, if they meet in the center, Waldo won't meet in the center. He's going to try to fight similar to Volkov. I'm going to use my jab and stay to the outside. I want to engage you. That's why I think Pavlovich will shoot the takedown. Eventually, you're running, you're backing up, you're backing up, you're backing up, you're going left, you're going right. I just got to take this guy down, right? Russia's got a closer time zone to China. He's spent a lot of time in Southeast Asia, Pavlovich has. I feel like he'll be ready for this. Waldo's got from the Dominican Republic, but again, that's not a different time zone. And then he's been living in Arizona for a while. Now he's got to fly over there, and he's competing at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the morning. Maybe it throws him off a little bit. I'm just trying to use any excuse to feel better about this Pavlovich play because I don't love it, but he is going. I'm going to go ahead and lock it in and take Sergey this week.
Yeah, the time zone is an absolute wild card for a lot of these guys. Crazy things happen. Sometimes at some of these cards, like you see people just have completely flat performances. Or you see like Yakuza money coming in, like Bang versus Cunts. Remember that?
Yeah. 100%. Someone's going to try to flip something. You're telling me that Yitza, the Yakuza, is not going to try to
somebody got something? Pounded in Bang Cunts. I'll tell you that much.
Bang ended up getting jail time out of that in Korea. He did like almost 2 years.
Yeah, and he didn't even throw the fight.
He won. He won a split decision.
He was supposed to lose, though, but he was in cahoots with them. What a wild, wild situation.
Yeah, I'm going to do a mixed martial madness on that one at some point, because eventually he'll just die from public consciousness. And it's like, no, this is wild. Mm-hmm. And you think this is the only time? No, this is just one of the only times they got caught.
Yeah, he flipped from like a 2-1 underdog to like -300. And you're just like, well, there's either an injury or something is horribly wrong here. Like right in the middle of the night, within like a 2-hour window. Like it was so the sketchiest line move. And there was openers that move, but it's like, we're talking fight day, a couple hours before fights. It's just like, you don't swing like 30% win probability. Like that's just. There's something horribly wrong. The amount of money to move things that amount would be astounding. Anyway.
The best is, though, when they talked to Bang, they were like, if you know anything going on, you let us know. And he's just like, oh, okay, I'll let you know, okay. And then when they asked Koontz, he wasn't in on it. So they're like, is there anything going on? He's like, I have no idea. Then to find out, I fought a guy who was attempting to throw the fight, and he still won. That would kill your confidence. It would absolutely kill your confidence. It's like, damn, I fought a guy that was throwing the fight, and he still beat me by split decision. God damn.
Did Leo Kuntz ever fight again?
I think he did once, maybe. I'm going to check. I think he fought a time, but that was the end of him. I assume after that, it's like he lost to a guy that was trying to throw the fight.
Trying to lose.
So the UFC cut him because they weren't having none of that. He had nothing to do with it, but he was already 0-2, and they were just like, no. People have identified that Kuntz is the kind of guy you can throw a fight against, and there'll be a huge line. No. Then he went to Korea, funny enough. Went 1-1, lost to the line of Chechnya, Zhmil Zavarov, and then ended his fight. Quick little win against a 23-49 opponent, just so he can sail off in the sunsets for none other than Paul Shaughnessy's favorite promotion, Northern Iowa Fights.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. And that was the end of him.
That's hilarious.
I know.
So he went to another fixed fight. Yeah. They're trying to target me. I'll show them. I'll just guarantee myself a win by going to the Northern Iowa Fight promotion. Always a red flag if you're watching tape and you see, oh, you're like, oh, this guy's 4-0 in this promotion, but like 0-3 and everything else. It's just like, fade that guy.
I mean, he's 0-2 in the UFC. His losses are the split decision to Taeyong Bang fixed fight, and he got subbed by Islam Makhachev. And he made it to the second round with Islam Makhachev, too.
Tough beat.
It's a tough beat. The bottom line is Kuntz never called you up and said, I'm not allowed to come to this district because my ex-wife is filing charges on me. Like, at least he showed up, win or lose. That's my Leo Kuntz story.
All right, moving on down. We've got Sumedergi taking on Kevin Borjas. Sumedergi is a -165 favorite to come back on Borjas +145. Who you got here?
Yeah, okay. So this one pains me because I always pick the Peruvian guy. I like Peruvians. They got cast iron durability. They got cast iron cardio. If you're going to fade one of them, yeah, go right ahead. But take it by decision because these guys can take a lot of punishment. Generally just have that cardio to keep things competitive. On the other hand, with Sumedergi, I think this guy could actually be pretty good. When you're talking about 125 pounds, right? He's 5'8" with a 72-inch reach, and he's southpaw, so he's got a nasty, like, long left. To put things into perspective, he's 3 inches taller than Kevin Borjas and has a 4-inch reach advantage. Trains at Team Alpha Male. His cousin is on road to the UFC right now. His cousin looks unreal. That Sangsun Bose guy, like he looks, oh, like he'll probably win.
Bro, is that his cousin?
That's his cousin. This guy's probably gonna win it because he looks, well, they're all Enbo, and you'll see this on the same thing. There's a lot of these Enbo.
There's an Enbo guy coming up. He's fighting Kiefer Crosby.
He's fighting Kiefer Crosby. I feel like there's three of them on the show, but of course Sumedergi comes.
No, I mean on this show.
Yeah, on this UFC.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know Sumedergi's Enbo, but
Zhu Rong was Enbo as well, right?
Zhu Rong was Enbo. This Nuriyaji.
Yeah, fighting Kiefer.
Yeah, fighting Kiefer. He's Enbo as well. I don't think Mahashad is. I don't think Yitzhar Zhang Lao is. Yeah, so there's three of these Enbo kids, and I tell the story all the time, but of course, you know, if you haven't heard or you're new to it, Enbo is an orphanage in China where if you can't afford to take care of your child, you drop them off at the orphanage, and Enbo feeds them, clothes them, teaches them. They're not just fighting all the time. They bring in private tutors. They have a full school curriculum. They have a private chef, and then they fly in top-notch MMA strikers and jiu-jitsu guys and wrestlers. And like, their whole thing is, we are going to feed you and clothe you and educate you and take care of you and make you, you know, contributing members to society, because you're dropped off here as it's an orphanage. Parents couldn't take care of you. And in exchange, you're going to fight. And we're going to make the money on you fighting. That's how you're going to pay us back. We're going to provide you with this life, and then you're going to hit us on the back end. Kind of like Team Takedown with Johnny Hendricks. It's like, we're going to pay for you and Jake Roschel and Jared Roschel and Chaz Skelly, all these wrestlers that we brought into this gym right out of college. We're going to feed you and clothe you and train you, and then you have to sign a contract that gives half of your money to us. Johnny Hendricks won the UFC title. Team Takedown took half the money. They had got him to that point. And most of the same thing. Thing is that these kids are getting dropped off at 5, 6, 7 years. There's a nursery there. You can get dropped off as a little baby, and they have a nursery. Then they bring you up into a child. Then you start training at 5 or 6 years old. There's been American guys that have gone down there. They've written stories about the gym. They have great things to say about them. It's this like billionaire Chinese philanthropist that pays for the whole thing, but they're going to produce killers by no other reason than they're taking a little kid, an impoverished little kid that wants to fight for something more than what he has, and they're giving them lots of training. And there's a lot of these kids, and then they're not all going to be good, right? But some of them are going to be good, and you're starting to see that wave come through. When you look at Suma Derji, yes, he's been at Team Alpha Male for a while, but these guys aren't trying to, we're just going to keep you at Enbo forever. It's eventually go off to North America, go there. There's a lot of good Chinese prospects at Team Alpha Male. Join them. That's what Suma Derji's been doing. Looking at his run, it's like when he was hot, beats Andre Sukumantath, he struck him like 92-28, knocks out Malcolm Gordon, beats Zaruk Adashev, and then it's just, it's a tough run. Against Matt Schnell, he looks like a million bucks. He is beating Schnell up, clean knockdown, left hand can't miss, and then it's a crazy fight. Crazy scramble ensues, he gets taken down, he ends up in a triangle choke. Him versus Tim Elliott, this one aged pretty good. Tim Elliott's clearly still got it. And that fight's actually at 135 pounds. And then his fight with Charles Johnson, Charles Johnson's like, you know, a top five, top contender in the division. And, you know, he had a good fight with him. He had a couple submission attempts. He landed some good shots. Unfortunately, Charles Johnson edges him out. That puts you on a three-fight losing streak. People start to forget about you, but he's still young. He's a big, tall, long flyweight. Hits sufficiently hard. And do feel like his grappling is really starting to catch up. So that last fight with Mitch Raposo, Mitch Raposo has got good athleticism, good timing, good takedowns. He took him down six times. It's not as if he accepts the control at any point. And there's
that,
six
that was takedowns. A bad split, too.
It's a terrible split. Raposo went 6-for-19 on takedowns, right? And only, and of the six takedowns, he got 4 minutes of control time. You're averaging less than a minute every time you take him down. Whenever he gets up, he's lighting him up. Suma Derji outstruck him 45-9 in the significance, 78-13 in the totals. Mm-hmm. Why it's a split, I couldn't tell you, but his takedown defense looked vastly improved. His get-up game looked vastly improved. And of course, his striking's there. He's fast. He's accurate. I get he's 1-3 in his last four fights. He's fought good guys. And with Kevin Borges, being that he's giving up 4 inches of reach, 4 inches of, 3 inches of height, I should say. When you look at him, Ronaldo Rodriguez is 5'6". Alessandro Costa is 5'4". Josh Van is 5'5". They're all his size. So you can stand in the pocket and you can exchange with these guys. Van doubled him up. Alessandro Costa knocked him down and almost tripled him up. Ronaldo Rodriguez, well, you know, he was able to have success there and he got that win. Point being is Suma Derji is a much different style, man. You can't just meet him in the center, right? He's going to be constantly angling off, creating space, landing that straight left down the pipe. That Peruvian brawling style of being durable and coming forward is badass, but it's not going to work against a sharpshooter. Plus, he's got a better grappling advantage on you in case he wants to mix one up. It's a large cage in Shanghai. He'll have lots of space to work with. And if this thing ends up being a split decision type spot, they're giving it to the Chinese guy in China. So, yeah, I feel like Suma Derji is a pretty clear win over Borges. But, of course, I love these Peruvians. I know he'll be there to the last minute. Feel like maybe I take Suma Derji by decision so I can still give Borges that respect that he'll take those punches. He'll last the 15 minutes. I just don't think he's fast enough. I just don't think he's got the reach. And I don't think he's got an ability to switch to a plan B if brawling in the pocket is not necessarily materializing for him. So, for me, it's a Suma Derji play.
Yeah, the reach should be pretty hard to overcome there. Don't have too much to add. I think it's a close competitive fight. I don't feel very, very convicted, but I'll side with the small fave in Suma Derji. Suma Derji by decision is like +115, +120. So you're getting, you know, 60-70 points. I suppose it's not the worst thing. It's going to be really tough to put Borges out of there. He's very, very durable outside of... It was the leg kicks from Alessandro Costa that really... took Borges out of there more so than the strikes to the head. So, yeah, I expect these guys to go over. I expect it to be a decision. I expect it to be hotly contested. So how am I going to bet it? Maybe not at all, but Suma Derji will be the pick for me as well. We got your Enbo boy, Taiyalake Neuralgi, taking on Kiefer Crosby. Neuralgi is, I believe,
biggest favorite on the card.
Second biggest favorite on the card. Second biggest favorite on the card. Because Weston Wilson's on the card, right? Neuralgi making his UFC debut, 11-0, Enbo Gym kid. Kiefer Crosby, They've been trying to get him on this card. So Kiefer was supposed to fight. Who was he supposed to fight off? Song Kanon. Yeah, he was getting brought over here to lose to Song Kanon. And then Song Kanon pulls out and they're like, nah, don't cancel your flight. We got this Embo Kid, Jim Kidd. Embo Kid, Jim Kidd, 6'2", 75-inch reach. Watched some tape on him. Doesn't look bad. Obviously, a work in progress still, but he's 11 years younger than Kiefer Crosby. Facts are facts. Like, I don't know what it would take for me to pull the trigger on Kiefer Crosby at the UFC level. I'm not going to start now. It's neuralgia for me. What about you?
Yeah, it seems like neuralgia is the play, being that this guy's 6'2", with like a 76-inch reach at the weight class. Like, he's a big guy, and I do expect him to be larger than Kiefer Crosby, faster than Kiefer Crosby, as you mentioned. You know, he's a lot younger, seems a little more athletic, and yeah, he's an Enbo kid, so he's been training basically the vast majority of his life. He's got multiple teammates on this card. He's got multiple teammates on the road to the UFC going down the exact same weekend. I think he'll be prepared. What I don't like, it's a big line, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily check out. So this kid's taking the fight on short notice, and he's the second biggest favorite on the card. Okay. They booked him to fully supposed to fight this Alison Barbosa, but it's injury during weight cut. Well, what? Was it a bad weight cut? You hurt yourself in the process of the weight cut? Okay. Then he's supposed to fight against Road to UFC against Kit Campbell. Well, he pulls out of that as well. So he was not supposed to fight on the contenders. He wasn't supposed to fight in the UFC. He was supposed to fight on the road to the UFC. He's a green prospect that has not earned his way to the big organization yet. And yet, they're in China. They need somebody. They've got five Enbo guys they're working with between Road 2 and this Shanghai card. That he's just the guy that's sitting on the sidelines. He's effectively not had a fight in a year. The guy that he beat 1 year ago had a 1-1 record. And of his 11 pro wins, 9 of them are by knockout. Okay? 1 submission. 9 knockouts. Well, here's the thing with Kiefer Crosby. The trick to beating him is not knocking him out. It's submitting him. I don't think he's ever been knocked out. Charlie Leary, the doctor, stopped because of the cut. Georgie Garahanian subbed him. And then in the UFC, Kevin Jusset subbed him. And Sam Patterson subbed him. If your game plan is to stand and bang with him, which seems to be the game plan for Nwergi, is he's got 10 knockouts in his 11 wins. When you watch tape on him, it's like he's usually the aggressor. He's looking to strike first. Kiefer Crosby was outstriking Kevin Jusset 39-29, but then he got taken down and got rear naked choked very fast. Him versus Sam Patterson, it was even on the feet. Then Sam Patterson took him down and subbed him. If your game plan is just stand with him, that's literally his only path to victory, is he can strike. Yeah, he's older. Yeah, he's slower. Yeah, he's smaller, but taking him down and subbing him, that's the easy money, right? Standing and training with him is a little more path of more resistance. This guy's got high level experience. He's fought for Bellator. He's fought guys like Georgie Karahanian. He's got 2 fights in the UFC. I don't think SBG Ireland is a good gym at all, but you know, at least he's got some credible training partners and a terrible head coach, but some credible training partners that come into the gym here and there. Fuck John Kavanaugh. But I think this guy's going to get beat up. But the minus 470 line, you got a kid that's young, short notice, hasn't fought a year. Last guy he fought was 1-1, was supposed to be road to the UFC. And now you're given just a direct entry for no other reason than we need somebody on short notice. And you're a minus 470, minus 500 favorite over a guy. I think he wins. I'd line him personally at minus 175, minus 190, minus 210 maybe. But it's just Kiefer Crosby's fighting. I thought that guy got cut. He's 0-2. He was non-competitive in both of his UFC fights. This is all fair, but he was taking on guys that took him down in those fights. Don't know that Nwergi does that, and so it might be a little more dicey than a 5-1 line would suggest, but it's not enough for me to switch the pick. So I'll take him, but I don't think I put him on the line. It feels kind of irresponsible. Put him all the way at the top.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying to me is Nwergi by sub plus 878.
Is it 878? Is that what you just said? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, in that case, it's like that's a no-brainer. He has 1 submission.
He has 1
and
submission.
Then to his credit, the 1 submission win he has, okay, the best guy he's fought. Yeah. So that means something, right?
That guy that he fought, I was just looking at it on Tapology. The guy he fought has lost. Well, it's like Maxim Shevchenko. But it like went to decision with like a 9-0 Russian named Ahmed Musayev. So it's like, it's not exactly just like a walkover, and he armbarred him in the first round. So,
yeah, and keep in mind at Enbo, normally it's like, oh, you have music class, and then you have arts and crafts, and then you have gym time. These guys, it's like you have submission grappling class, and then you have striking class, and then you have gym time. So he knows how to do everything. It's just obviously he would prefer to strike. But you're right. If you can get a good prop like that on the sub, Kiefer Crosby, watch him versus Juicehead. He's beating him up. Kevin shoots one takedown, and he just gives up his back and gets choked out. It's the funniest sequence. He cannot grapple, I suppose, which is par for the course for the SPG Ireland guys. So, I agree, Paul. If you can get a big number like that, Nwereji by submission seems crazy, but it's got a good chance of hitting. And he remains the play for me. Just there's a little hesitancy over dropping the whole bankroll on him because there's a couple things going against him, a couple red flags here and there.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to touch the money line at all, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. But I'll be tickling that prop. That's for damn sure. We got the legend of Mahachat taking on Gage Young. It's a straight pick 'em, homie. Who you got?
I got Gage Young. I understand it's not easy to fly to China and to fight at a different time zone, and Gage Young, you know, really isn't all that good. It feels to me like this kid's sitting on a win. He gives me like Francis Marshall vibes, where it's like when you see him, yeah, he's well-rounded. He can strike a little bit. He can grapple a little bit. He's durable, but he's a young, hardworking kid. This guy's 25 years old, right? Getting in some quality work. And just like a Francis Marshall, is you'll start training with different teams and different coaches and different training partners, and you'll get a start of sense of maturity. He'll be okay. I think he's going to be okay. Looking at his record, I mean, 7-1 as an amateur. As a pro, he had lost to Bobby Lee, who was very seasoned at the time. He's got a couple okay wins. And then just like that, you're on the Ultimate Fighter or the Contender Series versus Quinlan Salik. Now, in that fight with Quinlan, he gives up 8 takedowns. He's mostly just getting taken down. But his get-up game, 9 takedowns. His get-up game's not bad. He's trying to get in the pocket. He's trying to throw down. His cardio looked good. His durability looked good. It's just there was one glaring hole that his opponent was able to exploit, which was the multiple takedowns. They don't give him the contract. Obviously, he loses. He wins one fight for FAC, and then he's back in the UFC. This time, again, short notice, against Evan Elder. And, like, he showed a pretty good chin in that fight. The cardio's still there. The resolve is there. You're not winning. It doesn't mean you're not going to win long term. It's just sometimes you got to go through some bumps and bruises, trials and tribulations, and you're going to learn. I feel like this guy could turn the corner at some point. Now, he's 5'9 with a 70-inch reach. Mahachat 6 foot with a 71-inch reach. They're relatively the same size. You're not gonna have some big size advantage, but when I look at Mahachat, his win over Steve Garcia aged extremely well. Outside of that, he's prone to getting outworked. Like him versus Rafa Garcia, he got outstruck 49-25, doubled up with the 6 takedowns. Him versus Borishev, he got doubled up again, 85-32, and got knocked down 3 times. Him versus Gabriel Benitez, he got not doubled up, but outstruck by a 30 strike margin. His last time out against Nicholas Moda dropped him twice. And again, you know, it landed him by a 21 significant strikes margin. His durability, not necessarily he's always getting knocked out. He gets knocked down a lot, which you could be having a good round. One knockdown, you're probably losing that round. So visually, it's not good. The other thing is that he's got big power, but Gage Young looks like he can take a hell of a punch. So if Mahachat doesn't get that quick knockout, he's going to be prone to getting outworked. He damn near lost to Achilles Estramadura on the Contender Series, a Canadian fighter from out west, based on the first round he's getting lit up and then the kid slows down. If you can just stay in his face, not, you know, take a foot, go on your back foot, you're going to outwork him. If you can take his shots, I think durability is the key to beating this guy. And beyond that, he's kind of got some durability issues of his own. Again, you just got to make this a firefight. I get it's in China. I get it. The fans want an exciting fight. This is going to be a very exciting fight. I feel like Mahachat is going to be a step behind Gage Young, land less significant shots than Gage Young, land less of them. And unless that first round knockout or that second knockout materializes, Young's going to start to take over. When you look at tape on Gage Young, there's a ton of holes. There's a ton of greenness. He's 25 years old, man. He's going to continue to get better. Mahachat's actually only like 27, I think. So he's, you know, fairly young himself, but I just not seeing a ton of improvements from him. This is the, is it the closest line fight on the card? It's one of the closer line fights on the card.
So it doesn't actually get any closer.
Yeah, I can see good merit for both sides. I see the narrative of Team China in China, and I'm largely taking a lot of these Chinese fighters. They're not all going to win. There's going to be some random foreigner win here or there, and that foreigner, I think, is Gae Jiang. So, yeah, there's no underdog money to be had. It's a straight pick 'em, but I think like we're going to see some improvements from him, just enough to get the win over Mahashat.
Yeah, I've been the supporter of Mahashat over our time here on this program. It all started with, I mean, he came onto Contender Series against Achilles there and was like a complete unknown. There was basically no tape on the guy. And he pulled off a big upset. That's why, like, I think he was like a plus 600 underdog or something. But that's because, like, nobody had any idea. And then he knocked out Steve, and I was just like, oh, boy, we may have something here. And, like, that thing, that win has aged like a fine wine. And it's been mostly gone to shit since then, to be perfectly honest. I bet against him, against Gabriel Benitez, and they robbed me. He really should be on a 4-fight losing streak at this point. And getting knocked down 3 times by Borishev, 2 times by Mata. Both of these, like, I think wrestling probably negates itself. And what do we get left with? Volume. And I suppose he did put up 97 against Gabriel Benitez, but consistently he's just getting outworked in every single fight. So I'm with you. Not all the Chinese guys are going to win in China here. Gae Jiang is the pick for me as well. And we'll see. Maybe Gae Jiang has the wrestling advantage. Who knows? I'm not sure who will have the wrestling advantage. That could be the key to this fight, but I would probably expect these guys to just throw it down in the center. And Gae Jiang's durability seems to be better than Mahashat. As much as it pains me to say, I won't let Mahashat in my apple pie this week.
I like that.
All right, we got Lonier Kavanaugh taking on Charles Johnson. Lonier -200 favorite to come back on Johnson, +170. Your thoughts?
I want to take Lonier Kavanaugh. I do. And I think he can win this fight, but it's going to come entirely down to game plan. If he fights a fan-friendly, let's strike game plan, I think he loses. If he goes to his takedowns, that's the path of victory. When you watch him versus Jose Ochoa in his UFC debut, it's a close fight. There's no takedowns. He lands 51. Ochoa lands 50. He won the fight, but it wasn't by like the biggest margin. He kind of fought to his opponent's level. They go tit for tat, punch for punch. Ochoa, who ended up being pretty decent, but not great, gave him a go, a legitimate go. Then his fight with Felipe Dos Santos, in the first round wrecks him, busts him up, causes, you know, blood spewing from his face. The second round's a little closer, and then Kavanaugh's like, I need to wrestle. And as soon as that flipped in his mind, I need to wrestle, the rest of the fight was Kavanaugh. He got the takedowns. He made it look good. To that point, when you watch tape on Lonier Kavanaugh, he doesn't wrestle that much. He's mostly a striker. It didn't work exceedingly well against Ochoa. It wasn't working exceedingly well against Felipe Dos Santos. The wrestling bailed him out. When you look at Felipe, he's 5'7 with a 70-inch reach. That seemed to give him troubles, right? Charles Johnson is 5'9 with a 70-inch reach. The length is going to give you the same troubles. Lonier Kavanaugh, I don't want to get too statsy for you. Johnny the Greek always just hits you with so many stats. It's a little confusing at times, although he did okay last night. Anyways, the stat here is that like Lonier Kavanaugh's landing, you know, less than 4 strikes per minute. Charles Johnson's landing a little under 5 strikes per minute. He just lands more. He's longer. He's fought in much better guys. He's fought in he beat Josh Van. He's beaten Azat Maxim. He's beaten Suman Derji. He was in a competitive fight against Ramzan Temirov his last time out. He's been there. Obviously, he has more experience. He's the bigger flyweight. He throws more volume. And he shored up his takedown defense. I mean, his last few fights, it's like he's either stuffing the takedowns or getting right back up. But there's no doubt about it. At one time, Cody Durden takes him down 11 times. Rastel Estevan planted him to the ground. Everybody had been taking him down, Ode Osborne included. If Lonier Kavanaugh comes in with this game plan of matador this guy and make him bait him into a false sense of comfort with the striking and then shoot the takedown, I think Lonier Kavanaugh can take him down. I think Lonier Kavanaugh can give him a grind. It's if you get to striking with Charles Johnson, he may outwork you. You are faster than him. but he throws up a lot more. He goes to the body. He's a technical, precise striker. He's a better striker than Felipe Dos Santos is. And Felipe Dos Santos was giving you everything you can handle your last time out. Felipe half quit on himself in that fight. Johnson never quits on himself in fights. Johnson's lived in Thailand for a couple of years. The traveling and the time zone is not likely going to mess him up. He's live, man. He's
gotta
live.
Pick some dogs at some point here, boys.
I know. So I'm taking Charles Johnson, and just because it's a flyweight fight, he's plus 170. And because I'm a sick degenerate, I take the Johnson by decision. I just think he's just got to keep a work rate up, stuff him with the jab down the pipe, keep the fight standing, edge out two of the three rounds. Lonier Kavanaugh is, I mean, he's repping the Chinese flag, right? But it's Hong Kong, I'm pretty sure. I don't know. It says he's born in England. He lives and fights out of England. I'm pretty sure one of his parents is from Hong Kong, and yet they rep the Chinese flag with him all the time. So I don't know what kind of fan favorite he is over there. He's British by way of Hong Kong, and they don't like Hong Kong. I really don't know what to say. I think if it's a close fight, they'll get it to the rightful winner. And Charles Johnson's just got more experience, better striking right now. And his takedown defense has won, improved. And Lonier Kavanaugh's not a natural wrestler. He wrestled his last time out because he needed to, because his head was split open and he's bleeding all over the place. You know, it's a live underdog shot here. As Paul said, you need a couple dogs. Some of these Americans are going to squeak through. I think Gage Young wins. He's even money. I need a bona fide American underdog to bring it on home, baby. I'm going to go with Charles Johnson ever so slightly. I know it feels icky, but Johnson's my guy for this one.
Yeah, like Lonier Kavanaugh, yeah, it was definitely a rough round one against Felipe Dos Santos. And sure, he was able to get the wrestling going there. And maybe that's part of the narrative for people who are betting Lonier Kavanaugh. It's like, oh, he's going to lean on the wrestling. It's just like Johnson's wrestling's bad. Felipe Dos Santos' wrestling may be the worst in the division. It's like you got to kind of factor that in. Everybody who fights Felipe Dos Santos is able to take him down. Victor Altamirano had 9 takedowns.
Yeah,
9 said. Takedowns.
Enough said. Yeah.
9.
Altamirano.
Manel Cops never shot anything. He got a takedown. Everybody takes him down. It's not to say that Lonier Kavanaugh can't do it, but yeah, I feel like plus 170 or plus, I grabbed some plus 300 Johnson by decision.
Yeah, that's I like that.
Yeah, I get good props. I get good numbers on props. We got Rong Zhu taking on Austin Hubbard. Rong Zhu is a minus 250 favorite. The comeback on Hubbard, plus 212. Ugh. I feel like I'm like snake bit at this point. Austin Hubbard, last time out. Markel Medeiros. God, the cardio fell off late in that fight. And it just kind of like I had the split decision prop, so it helped. But like I had Austin Hubbard by split. And we got the split. And then I had fight ends and split. So, like, it basically, like, broke me even, but it's just, like, he just kind of let it slip from his hands. I suppose the Hernandez loss doesn't look as bad in hindsight coming off of this weekend, but I don't know. The price seems a little bit wide, minus 250. I don't love Rong Zhu, don't get me wrong, but the volume's getting better for him. I think the grappling, the takedown defense is getting better for him. Cody Steele didn't really shoot on him, but Rong Zhu is just quicker, faster. Is Hubbard going to dominate the grappling against him here? We just haven't seen Hubbard do that to too many guys. Rong Zhu's the side for me. If he does get taken down, he'll get back up, and he just throws so much volume that I really struggle to see Hubbard keeping up. So it's Rong Zhu for me. What about you?
Yeah, Rong Zhu is one of those guys that I mentioned from time to time. He turned the corner, right? This kid's got 32 pro fights. He's 25 years old, and he has 32 professional fights. Yeah, it hasn't always been easy, but he's learning on the job for the most part. When you look back at his early career, he gets caught in a lot of these quick little submissions, right? Then all of a sudden, he goes on a run where he submits a pile of opponents. in the UFC, it's easy to say, oh man, dude, he lost to Cazulo Vargas. Like, whoa, there's no coming back from that. In fact, we would joke around, friends don't let friends bet on guys that have lost to Cazulo Vargas. The bottom line is that he's 21 years old when he fights a 35-year-old man. So yeah, it's not always going to be easy. He's lost to Ignacio Bahamondes. He missed weight. Bahamondes is the biggest guy in the weight class. There's been a lot of trials and tribulations. The UFC cuts him. He goes to road to the UFC. He wins there, comes back to the UFC. He loses to Chris Padilla in his debut, getting knocked out. It's like, what's there to really like against Rong Zhu? But that Cody Steele fight, honestly, in my opinion, it looked like this kid put it all together. His aggressiveness was on point. His cardio was on point. His striking, his volume for days, his power was there. Cody Steele did shoot 4 takedowns, only got one of them, and he got like 6 seconds of control time. Cody Steele is a multiple-time Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt champion, is built, like his last name would suggest. He's a strong physical guy, was undefeated, was a giant favorite over Rong Zhu. I myself was backing him. I like Cody Steele. And Rong Zhu absolutely beat him pillar to post. Cody Steele did sting Rong Zhu at one point. Like, he did hurt him on the feet. But then Rong Zhu just shook his head and it cleared the cobwebs and just went right back to putting that firepower on Steele. Shocking that the fight went to decision because he landed a lot of big shots. And of course, he ended up getting a performance bonus out of it. At 25, you can look back at some of these old fights and say, oh man, he lost to Cazulo Vargas. And oh geez, he gets beat up in this spot. And no, he's a young kid learning on the job, getting better, figuring things out. I know it's just one win over Cody Steele, but he looked like he put everything together. His ability to transition between his skills, his confidence, his size. He looked physically bigger. He's got an easier time cutting the weight because he's got an actual strength and conditioning coach and nutritionist. It seemed like he's trending in the right direction. If you got a 25-year-old kid, the very fun fighting style, Chinese prospect, we're going to Shanghai. This is one of the guys you're looking to show the masses. You're looking to show this kid off and have him have a good little performance. Austin Hubbard's the guy that you do that against. He has no real threat of knockout. He has no real threat of submitting you. He's just a grinder. He's a guy that can grind on you. And that's kind of about it. His strikes landed per minute is a 3.87. You know, Rong Zhu's is just under 6. So, yeah, we know about the volume. But it's like Paul mentioned in his last couple fights. His fight with Markel Medeiros. He's winning. He's winning the fight. And then guy trains at altitude in Colorado. He's durable. He doesn't get tired, but he starts to get tired. In the third round, he tries to get a back take, slips off the top just being too high, and then doesn't get back up. He's a little slow and plodding at times. He's not all that athletic. When he fought Markel Medeiros, he landed 26 significant strikes. Him versus Alexander Hernandez, a little more competitive, but again, he's getting outstruck. He lands 63. Him versus Michael Figlak, that's the one big win because he's 1-4 over his last 5 fights, but he has that win over Figlak. Figlak's outstriking him too. No doubt he's going to want to wrestle Rong Zhu. That's his style. But Rong Zhu or Zhu Rong, I've seen it seen written both ways. Yeah, his takedown defense looked vastly improved against Cody Steele. I think he's going to be able to stuff these Hubbard takedowns. And then at that point, it's like, who's going to be landing more shots? Rong Zhu. Who's faster? Rong Zhu. Who's got more power? Rong Zhu. Feel like he's eventually going to eclipse him. I don't necessarily think he knocks Hubbard out. I think Hubbard's a very durable guy. I think this thing hits some overs as far as the totals are concerned. As far as a specific method of victory, I feel like Rong Zhu probably by decision. But I just feel like he's younger, faster, stronger, better striking acumen. The hole in his game maybe being his counter defensive grappling, and he seemingly has shored that right up. They're looking to showcase these Enbo kids. He's one of them. I think he looks good in this fight.
All right, we got Michel Pereira, Michel Maibel, formerly, taking on Kyle Daukaus, who makes his return to the UFC. Michel Pereira is a minus 260 favorite to come back on Daukaus, plus 220. It's hard backing your boy after that. Those stats don't even make sense. How do the last fight against Abus, how did he have 73 significant strikes?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really see it either. It was more of a beating, but it
seemed like he did nothing.
He got 30-27.
I mean, finally in round 3 he did throw. That I do remember that, but it's like he basically gave up the first two rounds.
Yeah, but he
threw stats seem whack for that fight, to be perfectly honest. I remember being
sad,
very, very sad, very disappointing, wondering why Michelle is not performing. Something seems fugazi. You know, the person keeping track of those stats had Michelle was trying to save their DFS contest that night. I will not be convinced otherwise. Either way, it seemed like the stats don't make it seem as bad as it was. Like, he seemed very, very lost, very lackadaisical. Last time out there, no real killer instinct. Dawkins, on the other hand, coming back, but historically has durability concerns. Like, on paper, this is a great opportunity for the fun Michelle Pereira to come out, do some crazy stuff, land a knockout, collect 50K in bonus monies. That's where I'm going to side because I'm a loyal guy. But I will say, you know, Pereira at minus 260, it makes me a little bit nervous. Your thoughts?
I think Pereira's lying about his age. Like, he says he's 31 years old, and I don't believe it. Like, on one hand, he's got almost 50 pro fights, but on the other hand, his pro career dates back 14 years, which would make him 16 or 17 years old at the time. And there's no real record of those fights, and he has no amateur career, obviously. He's Brazilian. It felt like when he debuted in the UFC against Danny Roberts, he was already in his 30s when he debuted. And yet they'll tell you that he was 25 years old. He was 25 years old with 30 pro fights. And he's not an Embo kid, because that's not uncommon for them. I think he's lying. And you used to see him do backflips and run off the cage and do crazy somersaults and break dance on his way to the cage. And then as of late, he's like flat footed and just standing there and staring at you. You can make the argument, it's like, oh, well, it's the weight cuts, dude. This guy's the biggest 170 you've ever seen. Yeah, well, now he fights at 185, and he seemingly has lost it a little bit. I will admit, at 185, his debut, Andre Petrosky knocks him out in the first. Mikey O, that one aged good, chokes him out in the first. Ior Pateria, bum, but chokes him out in the first. At 185, it's like, oh, he found that he was reignited with that finishing ability. At 170, his last fights are split decision over Ponzinibbio, a decision over Andre Fiallo, a decision over Nico Price, a decision over Chaos Williams. He became a decision machine at 170. At 185, it was reignited for the first three. And then the last two, the steps up in competition, he hurt Anthony Hernandez bad to the body in the first 2 minutes of that fight. And then as soon as Hernandez recovered, Hernandez arguably wins back the first round and then wins every other round after that until late in the fifth when he just flat out TKOs him. The next fight with a boost, it's like you're saying, the first round or two, he's worried about doing anything. Third round, he realizes he's in a hole. He throws. He lands more in the third round. He still loses the round on all three judges' scorecards for a 30-27 sweep. That big explosiveness isn't there anymore. Him fighting at 185 pounds, he's only got a 73-inch reach. So it's like his moves aren't putting money in the bank. He's not landing big leg kicks, bunch of them, demobilize you. He's not setting up his jab to walk you into a 2-3 counter or try to walk you into an extended punching combination. It's mostly he'd throw a big flying knee or a spinning hook kick or some big explosive technique. There's less of that now. There's more muscle mass on him. He says he's 31, but I'm thinking he's probably closer to 35 or 36. I just don't necessarily think I'm really in the Michelle Pereira business at this point. It's weird, too, that it's like he's a star in his own right. Two cards ago, he headlined an UFC Apex. Now he's on a Shanghai card fighting on the deep prelims against a returning Kyle Daukaus. It's like his star has largely faded. You mentioned who's waking up at 3 a.m. for Yitza, Weston, Wilson. It's like Pereira's right after that. Like, you know, they've done him no services here. It's kind of a bit of a weird one. Now, his original opponent, I don't know how he does against him, but Kyle Daukaus, short notice, it's a little strange. Daukaus, meanwhile, he's big. He's a big guy. He's 6'3" with a 76-inch reach. So not saying a 3-inch reach advantage is going to help all that much, but he's a much bigger guy. And BJJ black belt, his grappling's a little bit better. At his best, you've seen him be able to take guys down and grapple with them. Really good Darce choke. Maybe he could take down Pereira and out-grapple him. I believe that. If he can't take down Pereira, how screwed is he on the feet? Well, he's been knocked out a few times. Eric Anders knocked him out. Roman Delitz knocked him out. I don't know. I think there's a chance that he could get clipped. There's a chance of this and that. Thing is that he's preparing for a fight with Guram Kokuchvili. Kokuchvili, it was for the CFFC title. It was a four or five round title fight, depending on the CFFC's title fight rules. But Guram is a training partner of Alex Pereira. He trains out of Danbury, Connecticut under Glover Teixeira. He's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt from Georgia, and he's a large, large man that's fought as high as 205 pounds. So this is actually, in my opinion, an easier fight with Michel Pereira, who's half the size of the guy and a striker. Kyle Douglas has had a full camp, and he's getting ready to take on a good guy. And it was going to be grappler versus grappler, so his grappling is going to be good. In this fight with Pereira, he's bigger than Pereira and a better grappler than him. So why couldn't he drag this fight to the ground and put it in his, you know, sweet spot? Looking at the line, the Michel Pereira minus 260, I just can't get behind that at all. And as much as I can make a bunch of arguments for why you wouldn't really want to bet Kyle Doukas, it's a dog or pass fight for me. It really is. And so, as crazy as this may sound to some people, I got Kyle Douglas. I got Kyle Douglas to win this fight.
If I'm going to bet anything here, it'll be the Pereira KO line. And I just hope he just comes out after kind of laying an egg last time out and actually just goes for gold. Because it's like plus 150, plus 167 Pereira by KO. If he's going to win, if he's going to win handily, that's probably how he does it. But I don't know. It's tough. It's still going to be tough for me to click that button this week, to be perfectly honest. We got.
Okay, go ahead. No, I was going to say. I know. Kyle Doukas ain't no Anthony Hernandez, okay? But there is a chance that he's a Tristan Connolly. He can still get this fight to the ground and make it happen, baby.
Yeah, he could. Not gonna get too much. I'm not gonna get my elbows up too much defending Michel Pereira, unfortunately. No,
we got the people's main event coming up here, so you gotta save your energy. Event.
Yeah, this is when you gotta wake up, is when Yija and the legend, Weston Wilson Dubs, steps in there. -1200 for Yija. The comeback on Dubs is +700, +800 out on the market. I mean, when you look at the two of these guys, in terms of size in general, right? Weston Wilson is 6'1". And it's a featherweight contest, 6'1". The arms aren't very long. 73-inch reach. But Yija, I believe, is mostly a grappler in his own right. I'll admit, I did not put that much research into this fight because I saw the number and I'm like, well, there's only one way to go about this. I haven't clicked Weston Wilson, but Cody, at this number, I'm only human. At this number, it's dog or pass. We got a longer guy, maybe one of the worst guys on the roster. I understand Yija went out there, went the decision against Gabriel Santos, which is pretty credible, don't get me wrong, but giving up some size, taking a guy who had some submission skills in his own right, is a little bit longer. I don't know. There's no way I'm clicking -1200 on Yija. That's all I can guarantee you. And because I'm a degenerate, I'll probably have some money on Weston Wilson on Saturday. I will make the donation. What's your thoughts here?
Yeah, the line obviously scares you off. And where most places it's like, -1200, how's he gonna lose? It's like, you and I bet so much regional stuff that guys like this lose all of the time, right? It's just, you get bought into this, oh, this guy's no good. And Weston Wilson, oh, when was the last time he fought? Oh, a year ago. And what's his record in the UFC? 1-2, and he's a bum. And his losses are to Joanderson Brito by knockout and Gene Silva by knockout. So, I mean, one, he's in pretty good company there. And two, clearly the way to beating him is to be a big old Brazilian power puncher that can knock him out, right? His striking defense isn't great.
No.
It's not even that his striking defense isn't great. His durability is not great. His striking defense isn't bad. This guy actually trains with Wonderboy Thompson. He's been out of South Carolina his entire life. Ray Thompson is his head coach. He's at Upstate Karate. He has got that long 6'1", frame. He's got a tiny ass reach for a guy that's 6'1", but all the same, it's like he is a long pant karate guy, and he can use speed and some footwork and dance to the outside, but it's like the second he steps in the pocket to hit you and you hit him, he just falls right over. That's like his cardinal issue. Most of his losses, true to Ishihara, knocked him out in the first round as well. That's the key to beating him. Yitz is not a knockout guy. Yitz is a straight-up grappler. So now it's like, oh, well, I'm going to take him down and sub him. Well, he's got some okay submissions of his own. Pretty sure he's a black belt. If not, he's a brown belt. He's been training for a lot longer at a higher level. He's fought much better guys. If for whatever reason Weston Wilson can keep this fight standing, I think he's a better striker than Yitz is. Yitz is mostly just shoot takedowns over and over. Yitz is one of these Enbo kids, so no doubt he's learning everything and can mix some stuff in here and there, but his takedown accuracy is 30%. And that's factoring in that he's been fighting guys on road to the UFC. So Weston Wilson, although he's not great, he'd be better than an average guy on road to the UFC, I believe. He's got a striking advantage over you. His grappling is really not terrible. His one kryptonite is he can't take a punch, and you're not a puncher, but you're still minus 1,200 favorite over him. It looks a little bit suspicious. So, I mean, it's not enough for me to pull the trigger on Weston, but I just feel like he's going to give him a tough time in that standing. He's going to have his number. He's faster. He's tricky. It's hard to get a beat on him. So Yitz is going to shoot the takedown, and he'll get the takedown. And then you just got grappler versus grappler. But minus 1,200 for the guy on top, I'm not sure I love it. Again, you go from fighting Kay Wen and Sungwon Kim and Wusimbiake Jianfu and Koyoyomi Matsumushi and Keisuke Sasu. Yeah. That going from that, by the way, he won a split decision over Koyomi Matsumisha. And he lost a split decision to Jung Young Lee. And like, these are competitive fights, man. Should he be a minus 500, or minus 400, minus 500, minus 600? Yeah, I get it. People maybe don't like Weston Wilson. But minus 1,200 is just straight disrespect. So I don't fault you for digging. I don't think you can bet Yitz. What's there to bet?
I don't think you can.
Like, what is the angle? Well, I'll let you know maybe by Friday. I'll do a weigh-in show or a prop show. I guess I can't even do it Friday. This card is open so goddamn early. I'll figure something out pending on what the weigh-ins are. Maybe we can find a specific prop that makes more sense. But Yitz inside the distance, well, that seems smart, but like, is Yitz that good? Yitz by decision? Is Weston Wilson able to survive 15 minutes? This fight is a pass. If you're going to try to get a little more sleep first thing in the morning, maybe you sleep through this one, but then make sure you're up for Doukas Michelle Pereira, because that'd be a fun fight.
Hundo P. It's Dogger Pass.
Dogger Pass.
We got Su Young Yu taking on Long Zhao. Minus 130 for you, plus 110 for Zhao. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I find myself gravitating towards Zhao on this one. I wanted you initially. But yeah, Zhao, drum up the same old point, right? This guy's got, like, he's got 35 pro fights. No, 36 pro fights, and he's 27 years old. So I feel like at some point he's going to start really showing you the best of his abilities, and I feel like that's coming up. He looked pretty decent against Quang Lee's last time out, where he got the knockdown. He landed some decent volume. His takedown defense really isn't bad. He shows a 77% throughout. Now, he has given up a takedown to every guy he's fought. Contender Series, he got taken down by Christian Quinones. On the road to Contenders, he got taken down by Shohei Nose. He got taken down by Shuya Kamikubo. He got taken down by Chang Hyo Lee. He got taken down by Quang Lee once in his UFC, or his last fight in the UFC. Here's the thing. Shohei Hose took him down 4 times on 17 attempts and only got a minute and a half of control time. Shuya Kamikubo took him down 3 times on 19 attempts and got 4 minutes of control time. His get-up game is good, and you got to shoot 15, 20 takedowns if you want to take him down 3, 4, 5 times. So Sung Yu Yo, that's his entire game. 5 takedowns his last time against AJ Cunningham, right? 5, 4, 10 with 8 minutes of control time, only landed 18 significant strikes. His fight with Dermisi Zabasi, right? This is from Road to UFC in August of last year. 8 takedowns on 14 attempts. Got less than 3 minutes of control time with it. Won a split decision with 8 takedowns. Split decision. That's all he's doing. He's just shooting takedowns. He's got no ground and pound. He's got no threat of the submission. He's a decision guy. the South Korean guys, they're super strong, man. They're very strong. They've got judo bases. They can wrestle. Once they get on top of you, it's hard to throw them off. So that's the style that he's been using. It's an effective style. It's only going to get you so far. Now you got a live, hot Chinese crowd. You're not going to finish this, man. You're not going to choke him out. You're not going to TKO him. You're going to take him down. Multiple takedowns. You shoot 10 takedowns to get 5 and struggle to get control time. That's the story on Zhao Long. Watch all of his fights. They're always trying to take him down. He's either stuffing it or getting it right back up. When he gets back up, he's got the superior firepower. Better striking, more volume, more power, better scrambles, better transitions. He's going to get taken down. If you want to play one of these fantasy MMAs, Su Young Yu is going to get, you know, over 2.5 takedowns, over 3.5 takedowns. I could see it. I see him getting takedowns. He's going to struggle to control once the fight hits the ground. Once it gets back up, Long's going to be landing those better shots. It's going to go to the judges. The judges are going to say, hey, who landed the better shots? Who did the more damage? Who's fighting? Who's actually Chinese? It's all going to come down to the same answer. Zhang Lao. So, yeah, I think he wins. I think it's going to be a close competitive fight. I think he gets taken down a whole bunch. I think his get-up game and his superior striking is going to just, you know, edge it out, get him the win. So that's the play for me.
Agreement. Yeah, just like the hold, the takedown, hold down. Well, I don't know how the crowds are over there. Do they boo? They don't really. I know Japan, they don't really boo.
I don't think they boo, but you know how one championship is, right? Where it'll be like, here's a yellow card for stalling. It's like, oh, what's up? People want to see action. And even though like, where we laugh about the judges are going to be one local Chinese guy and David Levy and Aldi Amato. Like, yeah, they'll still bring over two doofuses. And those doofuses have been told, we're going over damage over control time, guys, now. Damage over control time. Mm-hmm. But you have this crowd, and they get really excited every time their local guy gets back to his feet. And, you know, they go quiet when the other guy just shoots 10 takedowns to get half of them. I think they'll look for the damage. And, of course, the UFC's gone to China. Normally, there's a few Chinese fighters. On this case, there's 8 Chinese fighters. It's like this is a fight night Shanghai for real. And we're looking to improve these guys so we can continue to go to Shanghai, so we can bring them into the fold in the UFC and have them fight in North America and build their platform. Su Young Yu, if he fought on Dana White's Looking for a Fight, or if he looked for on Contender Series, Dana would say, kid, you don't show up on Tuesday nights doing this. It's not their type of style. This is not their kind of guy. Zhao Long, meanwhile, his last fight against Quang Lee, I rock with Quang Lee. He's not bad. He dropped him. He beat him up. He had a good performance against him.
Yeah.
This is the same Quang Lee. Yeah, this is the same Quang Lee that took down Gaston Bolanos 4 times and choked him out. He took down Chris Gutierrez 2 in his debut on short notice. He can wrestle. He couldn't do shit to Long. This is a much easier fight for Long. I think the judges get it right. I think he'll get the win.
Finally, we've got Uran Satabaldiev taking on Dr. Nurzagay. Action is coming in on Nurzagay all week.
Scary.
Something's up, man. Because like after the stunt this guy pulls in his first UFC fight, like, you know, the sortie knockout looks nice on paper, looking back on it. Bartos, I suppose, on the Contender Series, sure. But, like, that sortie fight, I mean, sortie's a little bit long in the tooth at this point. But it looks good on paper. But, like, my God. Guy shows up, misses weight, has a pathetic performance, and gets subbed in round 2 against Brenton Ribeiro. Ribeiro's been making some improvements and stuff, but don't get me wrong. But I don't know. Uran, on the other hand, like, comes in, fights a heavyweight on short notice, puts in a really admirable performance, and then now he's coming back down to his normal weight class. What are we missing here? Why is everyone betting Nurzagay? Because I don't get it, man. I don't get it.
I don't fully get it myself, to be honest with you. When I watched Nurzagay, obviously his UFC debut, and man, after that stunt that other Kazakh kid pulled last week, that Idris, the Niza guy, it's like, I don't know, man. Are these guys throwing these fights, or are they just genuinely not that good? Looking at Dayar, Nurzadeh, he's got a win over Magomed Magomedov and a win over Konstantin Adrasev and Emiliano Sordi. Those guys were all older at the time, and so they don't look like that bad of wins. But yeah, I'm starting to think that this guy's extremely fraudulent. His fight with Bredson Ribeiro, he missed weight coming in at 210. And then Bredson was just twice as fast as him, right? Everything that Bredson does, it's like you can tell Dyer is having trouble figuring out what the read is. He hurts him standing. He takes him down. He just beats him literally pillar to post, subs him with a Kimura from guard. It's like a really, really, really bad look. And I made the joke at the time when he got on the scales is I've never seen a fat Kazakh person in my life. And I've seen, well, because they love traveling to Abu Dhabi. It's like a big tourist destination. I've seen thousands of Kazakhs hanging by the beach, hanging by the pool. I've never seen a fat one till this guy. I just don't think he's super serious. I don't think he's super skilled. I think he's lumbering. Can he win this fight? Well, they're both lower level guys, but you got to show me what can I see on tape that would lead me to believe that the guy's going to win? And I don't see a ton out of him. When I look at Uran, you actually pronounced his name right this time, but you used to call him Salty Baldiev.
Salty balls.
So Salty Balls. The thing I'll give him is when you talk about, you know, some decent wins, he too has a bunch of decent wins, right? Where he beat Bruno Assis, knocked him out for the LFA title. So you legitimately win the LFA 205-pound strap. He defends it against Leon Soares as a minus 800 favorite at 205. And then you make this short notice debut against Martin Budaj. Now, Paul mentioned this. He fought at heavyweight. But here's the real key here. He weighed in at 222 pounds. Which means it's less than a 20-pound weight cut. He's only cutting 15, 16 pounds to make 205. Martin Budaj weighed in 266 pounds on the dot because Martin Budaj actually cuts 15 pounds to make the weight. So fight night, you're still 222, and he's 280. What are you going to do with that? And he didn't do anything. He looked vastly, you know, just what are you supposed to do? You can take him down? No. No, you're going to stand with him? Well, maybe, but he's just so much bigger, and you're on short notice, and there was a lot of things going against him. I would say in this fight with Dayar, he's got better cardio. He's got maybe not better striking, but I feel like he's got a little more durability. He's got a little more resolve. He's got a better submission game. I think he wins. Is there an injury we don't know about? Is there a bad weight cut in the mix coming up? I don't think so. We'll see on weigh-ins, obviously. I just feel like Salty Balls maybe has his number here, right? He's just a coming back to 205 is going to help out. He's still only 31 years old. He got his UFC debut out of the way. He went to decision versus a heavyweight that just beat Marcus Buchecha and was also 6-1 in the UFC when they cut him, taking on a guy that is 0-1 in the UFC as well, but got Kimura'd by Bredson Ribeiro. Weigh-ins will maybe tell us some additional information. If there's an injury thing out there, if they're like, this guy's hurt, that's why the money swing. This guy's got a staph infection, that's why the money swing. I do not care. I routinely bet on guys that are healthy and have no staph infection over guys that have blown their meniscus and have a staph infection. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Someone told me one time, they were like, you're walking down the street and you have a shoe or you have a rock in your shoe. What do? Do you keep walking or do you take the rock out of your shoe? It's like, obviously you stop and you pull the rock out. Like you know how it is when you're walking, you got a rock in your shoe. Like it's very irritating. It's very irritating. It steps out. What the hell? You stop immediately. You take the rock out. You stop and you address it right away. Now imagine you have a rock in your shoe and some guy pulls up in a car and pulls out a gun and points it at you. You turn around and you start running. Do you ever notice that the rock is in the shoe? No. Three blocks later, when I'm huffing and puffing in a back alley, it's like, oh yeah, that's right. There's a rock in my shoe. Once adrenaline kicks in, you don't notice this stuff. And these guys will hurt themselves all the time. And like when the fight starts, they're good to go yoke it out for 15 minutes and then collapse in the back. So, you know, don't buy every narrative. I'm not sure what the narrative is on this one, but I made myself a real big promise after Dayar, after his last fight, I was like, I would never bet this guy again. And now you're given an opportunity to bet him. It's just not going to happen for me personally. You could just pass on this fight altogether. I get that there's a little uneasiness going on there. I'd like to take the over, but Dayar just got so much quit in him that who knows if it makes it that far. Don't really know how to attack this one. The pick for me is going to be Uran Satyabaldiev. And yeah, I just hope he does the right thing and gets the win. If not, it is what it is. It'll be probably a little bit lower on my my list of parlays this week.
The market loves DR this week. It seems, at least at this point in the week. Which
couldn't tell you why.
Stunning after that last performance. Anyway, we're just about out of time, but before we go, hit him with the PRP.
I'm going with Ming Yang Zhang, Aljamain Sterling, Sergey Pavlovich, Sumedergi, Nuraji, Gage Young, Charles Johnson would be dog number one. Rong Zhu, Kyle Daukaus, dog number two. Yitza, but like I ain't going to fault anybody for digging Weston, just strictly system play at this point. And then I will take Zhao Long, and I will take Uran Saltybaldiev. So yeah, I mean, I only got two underdogs straight up, but there's real good money on Daukaus and there's fairly good money on Charles Johnson. So I don't know. Does it feel like I need more underdogs? I just don't want to force anything. Paul pretty well already mentioned the other live underdogs, you know, a Kevin Borges, not that he was picking him, but that he's live as a dog. Kiefer Crosby, I don't think he's overly live, but if you're not going to take him down, maybe you're giving him a shot. I don't know. Austin Hubbard's tough at times. It's really up to you to like which one of these dogs you feel comfortable with. I only really feel comfortable with two, maybe three of them if I get there. But of course, I do want to watch weigh-ins because of the time travel and you're cutting weight and there's different hydration products and you're eating different food and it's a different culture and the quality of air is differently. Some of these guys will look awful on the scales. And then I'd like to lock in. I don't think we're going to miss a ton of lines waiting.
Slight underdog. So you actually have three at the time of this recording.
He's a slight underdog.
Underdog. Minus
yeah,
130
and
plus 110.
Gage Young is trending towards possibly being a slight underdog as well because he was like minus 130 yesterday. I think he's even money now. Things will move small, you know, gradually here and there. Mm-hmm. My main thing is figure out which one of these guys I like the most. Not all of them. Not I got to get every single one. Which ones do I love the most? And then I'm going to parlay them with the guys I love the most, PFL, Winchamin Jib, Road to the UFC, Fury FC, LFA, Tough Enough. There's a zillion things going on. So don't feel like you need to take a Yitza. Don't feel like you need to take a Saltybaldiev. Don't feel like you need to overextend on something. There's tons of action going on this weekend. Not everybody's going to hit. But of course, I am Mr. Optimistic. I'd love to hit a Chinese PRP, my friend. So that's what I'm shooting for. As always, swing for the fences. And whatever you guys choose to do, that's up to you. But of course, prop show, weigh-in show that I'll be doing on the Friday. And maybe we can find some additional leans over that way. But yeah, that's about it for me.
Yes, sir. All right, that's it for us this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. For Cody, I'm Paul. Saying goodbye and good luck.